Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
All right, Alex, we have the first segment of the 2024 draft complete, and curious what your overall thoughts were on the presentation and the execution. Then we'll kind of get into some of the big stories coming out of it, including what they did with Roman Reigns and the Bloodline and some of the other talent, and that'll be kind of our opening segment. Then we'll get into the rest of the content of SmackDown. But first of all, just the presentation, especially compared to past years, because this is Paul Levesque's first version of how he'd like to present this compared to, you know, the prior regime.
Is the presentation that it's not a draft at all? Like, because everybody stayed exactly where they were except for like two people.
Well, Paul Levesque did stress that it's as much about protecting your current assets as it is bringing new people in, because every pick from the outside is putting at risk somebody from the inside.
I get that, but I don't know. On the presentation side, it was about the same. Like, the beginning was cool, where he had Cody stay out there with him and do the picks. That was a cool thing. The champions staying where they are makes sense, and they probably should have done that years ago, just to avoid the nonsense we had, like, with the SmackDown titles and the Raw titles switching sides, which is funny because they finally fixed that problem and then made it so they can't switch anyway, so it didn't really end up mattering. But beyond that, I thought the presentation was the same. You know, we got the stars from yesteryear announcing the picks, but the stars that we got were people that work there that we see all the time anyway. It's not like they got, you know, Steve Austin or Hogan or, you know, somebody of that level to announce the picks. So it was about what I expected. I don't think anything was bad about it, but I'm super disappointed that they hype this as being the start of a new era. Mm-hmm. And like, from the SmackDown side, as a SmackDown reporter, the only new person that SmackDown gained is Nia Jax. And like, well, I actually like that. I'm in favor of it and what they did with her tonight, because I do think like the women's division on SmackDown is in dire need of new heels, which is a big part of why I've liked them bringing in Stratton and now Nia. Because I can't do it with like the damage control thing anymore, because I feel like it's just gone on for like 2 years where Bianca has feuded with damage control and it just hasn't ended. So I'm glad we might be getting a break from that. But otherwise, like, what happened? Like, we've seen Carmelo Hayes on SmackDown like 6 times. So they acted like that was a big deal, but it's not. Like, he got beat by Kevin Owens like a month ago in a match that didn't matter.
Yeah,
but now he's being pushed as an equal to Cody Rhodes. Like, it was just weird. Like, I don't know. I just, if you're going to tout it as this new era, I get the whole notion of, like, protecting your own. But how come all this made, like, no effort to get anybody? And when he did, the offerings are Nia Jax and Andrade. Like, that's not really what I had in mind.
So for people who are listening to us and didn't see the show, I think this is, I mean, obviously a lot of you can look online and look it up before, but not everybody's going to do that. And even if you have, you might not remember. So I'm going to just run down the picks for each of the brands here, Alex, and kind of comment on this, because for context, if people didn't follow it this week, more than half of the eligible wrestlers are saved for Raw. Men and women, CM Punk, Gunther, Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, Rey Mysterio, Bobby Lashley, Bronson Reed, Finn Balor, the Street Profits, New Day, on and on. On the men, on the women's side, Jade Cargill, Io Sky, Tiffany Stratton, Naomi, Dakota Kai, Asuka, Kairi, Chelsea, and Piper, all on Raw. So those are all off the table, along with other names who aren't as close to the main event as the main eventers and the mid-tier people I just mentioned. So the first overall pick, Bianca Belair, that was SmackDown's pick, and they, you know, my thought was they want to make a statement. Let's preface by saying Paul Heyman announced before that Roman Reigns had voluntarily withdrawn from the draft because he won't be around for a while. And he didn't want to steal the spotlight from everybody as the obvious number one pick is essentially the implication there. So that took him off the table. Also, CM Punk off the table, Drew McIntyre off the table on this night. So that left, in terms of big top-tier singles men, Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, Jey Uso, Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga as a bloodline. AJ Styles was getting a title shot. Kind of the next tier would be like Chad Gable, LA Knight, Braun Breaker, Ricochet, Sheamus. On the women's side, top tier choices, clearly Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, and Nia Jax. So they took Bianca first. Alex, what do you think of that as the first SmackDown pick in terms of the statement that they're trying to make with it? Because it does say, you know, because I'm sure a lot of thought went into who do we want to be number one on Friday, because they could have had other women who are going to be drafted Monday in this draft and either pick Bianca ahead of them or behind them, but it would have in and of itself made a statement, such as Jade Cargill being in the field at this point. So yeah, first, just your quick take on that.
Bianca made sense. She's basically been like the first woman chosen each time. And it was because they had previously to draft the champions first.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the last time they did this, like Roman went first on SmackDown and then Seth got picked and then it was Bianca. And then I think the time before that it was Roman and then Bianca or Becky or something. Either way, Belair has been like one of the first three or four general people taken over the last few drafts. So it stood to reason that if you're going to eliminate Roman from the field, that Bianca would be first. Like, she's the next logical option if Roman's going to continue towards the babyface path of politely removing himself from the field.
Then Raw's first pick was Jey Uso. Given the fact that the bloodline was still out there, Jay being taken first seems like a surprise. However, they did frame this as we don't know who the bloodline entails now that Roman is out and there's turmoil. So they built in an excuse to kind of have the bloodline move down in the draft. They did get drafted, but they got moved down the draft. So Jay was taken by Raw, by Adam Pearce, instead of Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, Liv Morgan, Nia Jax. Those are kind of the top names. I mean, AJ Styles in there too. How did you feel about that being the first Raw pick to retain Jay?
I actually thought that it was more of a purposeful move on WWE's part. And ironically, part of the reason they picked him first is I think also part of the reason they made the champion separate, because from a kayfabe perspective, Raw would have had to have a champion. So they would have had to pick Damian Priest high. But again, it would be really hard logically to explain why Damian Priest went ahead of like seven or eight other people off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I think that played into this decision too. But with Jay, they really want to elevate him. He is the current number one contender, and Seth is currently not on TV. So if they're going to pick a man and the champions aren't eligible and you can't take Roman, I mean, outside of Cody, Jay's the number two or three biggest babyface in the company. And of the people eligible tonight, I think the only male person you could make an argument for ahead of him, you say Orton, but there's like the kayfabe you could bring up of like, well, he's old. And you brought up the bloodline thing, and I actually think they can get out of that too, because Adam Pearce can bring up that the bloodline made him miserable, so he wanted to stay as far away from them as possible.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many, like, outs as far as that goes. But, again, if Seth's not on TV right now, want your quote-unquote first pick to be a guy that's on TV every week, Jay does make the most sense.
Yeah. No, I get the storyline reason and the current context. And then I think they think all this through. You know, well, what is the reason that Adam Pearce, you know, wouldn't want to take the bloodline? So SmackDown pick number two, this is where they, you know, were trying to make a big deal out of, oh, this is so shocking, big news. Way Barrett reacted real big to this, said no one saw it coming, Carmelo Hayes. So Carmelo Hayes, SmackDown's number two pick, could have had Seth Rollins, for instance. I mean, really, everybody else I just mentioned who was on the board, but they went with Carmelo. So that makes a statement, the statement being that Nick Aldis is really high on Carmelo. Now, spoiler alert, Carmelo would go on to lose to Cody Rhodes in the main event. So talk about this decision, the way it was framed, presented, how it was reacted to, and then Carmelo coming out, challenging Cody to a non-title match and losing in the main event, you know, pretty decisively after putting up a nice fight for a reasonable amount of time.
I thought this was weird because they went out of their way to, like, showcase him on SmackDown recently, mm-hmm. and they just didn't act like he was a big deal. Like, he showed up, he lost to Kevin Owens. I think he might have beat somebody, like, he beat, like, Santos or something. But it was just weird that they acted like all of that never happened, and SmackDown's getting, like, this hot rising star that nobody's ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, like, he was a face when he was on SmackDown previously, and now he's a heel. And they did like the AEW thing where they just make the assumption that everybody watches NXT. I can assure you that's not true. So,
right.
I thought it was really odd that they didn't explain any of that. And the crowd that was there, I don't know if it was a reaction to, like, Hayes specifically and their feud, but I think everybody felt the same way I did, where it's like, if SmackDown's going to take a guy second from NXT, I would have much preferred Trick Williams. And I get he's champion. They weren't going to do that. But I don't know. I just don't.
And I think they think Carmelo's more ready.
Well, I agree. Yeah. I agree from the company standpoint. But if that's the case and they thought they were going to do this, he shouldn't have been on SmackDown like a month or two ago. Like, they should have foregone all that. But at the end of the day, it's fine. I think it felt a little flatter than they expected it to, and that's kind of their own fault. But beyond that, he goes into the main event, and if they're going to do something with him and Cody going 50-50 for 10 minutes is fine. But if Carmelo Hayes is going to be mid-card babyface feuding with and losing to LA Knight in like a month, then that was probably a bad move and probably hurts Cody more than he realizes.
And that's been the thing with Cody going back to AEW, is having, you know, long back and forth matches that he wins in the end against people who are clearly beneath him, and you know what the outcome's going to be. The way they hyped Carmelo, I mean, there's probably some casual viewers out there who are like, is this guy good enough to beat Cody? But, you know, most people are watching this going, okay, AJ Styles going to, I was thinking AJ's going to show he actually still is a heel, and it wasn't just LA Knight, and he's going to interfere, or he's going to come out to watch, and then, you know, something happens inadvertent or whatever, and we don't get a clean finish. So, you know, for better or for worse, we got a clean finish. But Nick Aldis took Carmelo Hayes ahead of Seth Rollins, Bron Breakker, another option from NXT, Randy Orton, Nia Jax, you know, Ricochet, LA Knight, I mean, the Bloodline. There's a lot of people who went ahead of him, and I just question whether I think that comes across as we want to draft him high to kind of make sure everybody knows what a big deal he is, which if I felt he was ready to be that big of a deal and he didn't just lose to Cody in a main event, okay, but he got drafted ahead of all those other people. And I mean, he's good, but losing to Cody right out of the gate and not, I mean, I just, I don't know. I would have rather had him go in the next round, you know, and pick some other people first where it just makes more sense the GMs would do that. I'm just not buying that Nick Aldis coveted him enough to take him ahead of some of the others. And I know Seth has the injury and they can say, well, that's one of the reasons. And that's, you know, play off the NFL where certain picks get dropped lower because of injury concern and all that. So they kind of want to have that be in the back of people's minds, but they also don't want to make it seem like Seth is damaged goods and isn't valued anymore either. But he did come right afterwards. So I don't know, did they split the difference enough on that by having him go fourth overall? Because they just wanted to keep him on Raw, but they didn't want to put some other veteran full-timer ahead of him for political reasons, maybe, or what message it sends. So I think the story was, let's have Nick Aldis make a unexpected pick from someone who wasn't on everyone's draft board that high, as opposed to the other story being that he likes Randy Orton better than Seth, or whoever they might have put in tonight's draft pool instead of someone else in order to tell a different story. Because, I mean, he could have picked the Bloodline. I mean, that wouldn't have been controversial.
No, you're probably right that the Bloodline should have been the pick. I think you were right earlier when you said they wanted to play into that notion later and then take the Bloodline right after. You know, because I think you're going to get to this, but I think Barrett mentioned that Heyman must have went and said something like immediately after the altercation with Sokoa because they were picked right then. But with the Seth thing, I think it's an easy explanation, and Nick Aldis can bring up that he didn't want to separate Becky and Seth, so he didn't take Seth, and he took Carmelo Hayes instead.
Yeah. All right, well, go ahead, yeah.
I was just going to say, we were talking about the Hayes thing and trying to establish him. There's two things that come to mind. Do you remember when they drafted the Street Profits like second or third a couple years ago, or maybe even a year ago? Yeah. It feels like that, where they're like trying to point out that, oh no, trust us, these guys matter, and then like nothing really came of it.
Yeah.
This feels like that.
Yeah.
And from how things are on SmackDown and like how much Aldis wanted to sign the guy, if they wanted to do that with like a newer call up, it should have been Braun Breaker in that spot.
Mm-hmm.
They should have done
that. Totally would have been in favor of that. And he, the only downside is he got drafted to Raw, not SmackDown. So if they want him on Raw, yeah, it's just tough, you know, with the draft, because they want there to be, you know, compelling names both on Monday and Friday. But if they want Braun on Raw, then I don't know how you – yeah, I just don't think that affects the timing of Hayes directly at that point. I think you still end up with the same issue with Hayes. I think you easily could have taken Randy Orton at number two, just a legacy pick. No one's going to really, you know, some people are going to go, oh, really, Randy, come on. He's too, you know, he's older and all that. But everyone would kind of understand it. And then you can have Braun Breaker go in the next round and have then Carmelo be sort of a reactionary pick for SmackDown's pick right after Breaker. And then you can move Nia Jax up a spot. Like, I think that would work, and I don't really see a downside initially to that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So let's pause, let's introduce the show, and then we'll get back to analyzing the next segments of the draft. They did four segments of the draft, and we just covered the first one. Obviously got into a little bit what happened to the other ones, and then we'll talk about other aspects of SmackDown. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, April 26, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. I also host a variety of podcasts, including some free ones like the weekly Flagship. That's our blue logo show. Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Search Wade Keller. Subscribe to the Blue Logo Show for free. And this, our Red Logo Show, the post shows, which we live stream when our switchboard is operating, which unfortunately it wasn't on Wednesday night. But we are back tonight, and we stream live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and occasionally, although not much lately, Collision on Saturday nights. For a variety of reasons, we haven't been streaming live, not ruling it out. But for now, that's not in the regular schedule. But we are here talking SmackDown. The other voice you hear is Alex McDonald. He is PW Torch's SmackDown TV reporter. His reports run right above or below mine on the website every Friday night. And it's great getting his perspective on the show and what he pulled from the show in terms of the details that he writes about compared to what I do, to get a couple perspectives on our website every Friday night, or if you read it over the weekend. Obviously that's the case with a lot of you. And he's also part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Wade. Good to be here.
Yeah, so tell people about your Daily Cast, what you and Patrick are doing, and you know, a short sales pitch, and also just anything that kind of stood out in recent weeks that gives people a sense of the types of things that you guys are talking about these days.
So we are the 90s Past Cast. We cover the PW Torch from 30 years ago this week. And over the last month or so, we've had a really good group of shows with WrestleMania 10 and all the fallout from that. And, of course, we are doing Spring Stampede 1994 next week. This week on the show, really fun, for the first time ever, we did our own draft on the show set in April of 94.
Awesome.
So
yep.
Basically, we had to pick people who were signed to WWF, WCW, or the very new ECW in April of 94. And we both took 15 wrestlers each. It's a really fun time at the top of the show. And we ended up, like, super even because it's funny. We value, like, a lot of the same things. So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, no. And,
yeah.
But you end up with very similar rosters at the end. So it's a fun time. And other than that, big time news as we're like right on the cusp of the steroid trial in 94.
An amazing parallel to what's going on with the ex-president right now, a famous rich person having to sit in a courtroom and like Tony Khan wearing a neck brace. Tony Khan's not in a courtroom, but he was in the war room, the draft room for the NFL, wearing a neck brace with a little smile on his face. So yeah, that's going to be interesting. You guys get into that coverage too. So check it out. Search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe. You'll see the colorful PW Torch Daily Cast logo pop up. While you're at it, if you're interested in sampling what VIP is all about, you'll see the charcoal gray colored PW Torch VIP podcast logo show up. Also, when you search PW Torch, subscribe to that for free. We put free samples on that feed on occasion, and you can also upgrade within the app if you're using the native Apple Podcast app and get a free 3-day trial. So you can download all the shows that are locked for VIP members for free, and then if you don't cancel, which is easy to do, but if you don't, then it'll roll over into a subscription and you'll continue to be. You will continue to be able to access all the VIP shows as they come out every day. And we've got 18 years ago flashbacks, some of the earliest podcasts out there on pro wrestling. We put them up on pretty much a daily basis, insider news, backstage news from the year 2006, original Bruce Mitchell audio shows, pay-per-view roundtables, a lot of cool stuff, along with all our current coverage. And all our free shows are on that feed also, but with the ads and plugs edited out. So VIP members who support us that way get a nice streamlined experience. But we are here tonight to talk SmackDown. And our phone number, if you want to join in the conversation, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us, if that's easier for you, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you thought of the draft. So we'll get to our callers momentarily, but Alex, let's pick up where we left off and talk a little bit more here about the draft going to segment 2. SmackDown picked Randy Orton. Barrett said this was Aldis protecting one of his biggest stars at all costs. A little rich considering it took Carmelo, who was unlikely to go before this. And then pick 3, as we talked about, by Raw was Bron Breakker. SmackDown's 4th pick, Nia Jax, who was arguably the top woman on the board other than Bianca. And then Raw picked Liv Morgan. A reaction, they come out together. It's interesting. From a draft logic standpoint, I'm assuming we're supposed to believe that SmackDown had to, or that Aldis's room had to tell Adam Pearce's room who they took before everyone walked out with the envelope, so that if SmackDown took someone that Aldis wanted, that Aldis would have a couple minutes to go, you know, write down the backup pick. And then they both came out together because the envelopes were, you know, sealed and into the hands of celebrity presenters. It was Michelle McCool and Tori Wilson representing the respective brands here. So looking at that, I mean, it's Randy, a legend, going, Aldis protecting him, Breaker, the second NXT guy to go after winning a quick squash match over Cedric Alexander, and then the two remaining top-tier women going also. Alex, your overall thoughts on that round?
Breaker to Raw, it hurts as like a SmackDown viewer and having, you know, hopes for the guy, but they weren't really doing anything with him anyway. And it makes sense. I think a lot of people made the assumption he was more of a Raw guy in the first place anyway. You know, with Gunther being over there, and based on how tonight went, I would imagine Monday is more of the same. The part of it that was weird, though, and this is kind of why I brought it up with Hayes earlier, is it seems like Breaker's a face, basically. And SmackDown really needs those because, like, awesome, they have Cody now. But they basically have Cody and LA Knight and then Orton and Owens. And, like, everybody else on the show is a heel, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, like, Lashley doesn't do anything. And so it was weird because if you look at Carmelo Hayes, like, if he's going to be a mid-card heel on this show, he really doesn't stand out amongst Santos Escobar, Austin Theory, Grayson Waller, Logan Paul. Like, are they really going to have him feuding with, like, Kevin Owens and Randy Orton? Because that feels like above where he is kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have made more sense to keep Breaker there. But him going to Raw works. He can feud for the Intercontinental title if they put that on Gable or something. Otherwise, Orton is kind of what you said. It's a ho-hum, like, whatever. He could go to either show, and it wouldn't make much of a difference. And Nia Jax, really, really good, like, invigoration of a heel on SmackDown. It's been the Damage Control show for a long time now. And with Bayley turning face, they fixed part of that problem, but now there's, like, no heels. But she'll be good for Bianca, Bayley, and presumably Jade Cargill. I assume she stays on SmackDown. So that's a good person to bring over because she has three top-tier opponents immediately.
Yeah, yep. Good coverage there. So let's move to segment three here. We have D-Von and Bubba Ray Dudley presenting Fanchan at ECW when we want tables. And then the SmackDown pick in the fourth round was LA Knight, as you mentioned, part of the babyface depth chart on SmackDown. Ricochet on Raw as a babyface there. And then finally, SmackDown pick five. They couldn't drop any lower. Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman. The Bloodline collectively, you get a 2-for-1 wrestler-wise here. And did they mention Jimmy Uso? Is he on the – I hadn't thought about this, so maybe other people had. Is he not on the depth chart as eligible to be drafted on either pool?
So somebody posted the draft rosters on – Reddit, and Jimmy Uso is not pictured in either one.
Yeah, and yeah. I put an article up last night with the whole breakdown and put up my tiers of who I thought would go higher than others. WWE.com posted a list of the roster, and I was thinking, oh, did I leave him off my list when I'm looking at PW Torch right now, and I don't see him on my list. And so if he's not pictured, then yeah, that's weird too, that they're not even bringing him up. So I'm just like, I'm on the spot here trying to think, did I miss something or did I forget something that would explain that?
No. And when they announced the Bloodline, they explicitly announced Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
And they did a similar gimmick last year because when the Bloodline was drafted last year, it was Roman, Sikoa, and Heyman, and the Usos were left out. So they're sticking with that, and I guess I don't know if this goes back to like the whole dropped and never followed up on angle of like Jimmy putting himself back in the bloodline when nobody said that was okay, or what. I would imagine he's just going to be off TV for a while, and they'll figure out a way to shoehorn him in down the road. I kind of thought they would move Jay to SmackDown to make that a little easier to do.
Right, exactly.
But that's not the case. I mean, we can read the tea leaves like with everything else. Like, you brought up the Ricochet pick, which was like a good thing because I don't super care for the guy. But it's a bad thing at the same time because it's like, eh, I would rather have Samantha Irvin on SmackDown. But, you know, we can kind of read the tea leaves on Jimmy with where Naomi goes. Like, unfortunately, with it, all that stuff being public knowledge, it kind of telegraphs a little bit of certain things when it comes to the draft. So that'll be like our tea leaf about what happens with Jimmy, I guess.
Yeah, and there are reports that he is injured enough that he's there's reports of him being injured, but I don't know any details on what the injury is. I don't think that's out there, but you know, Seth is hurt. He's got a knee injury. He's getting surgery. So like keeping him out of the draft entirely just sort of raises an antenna that something else is going on, or it's like really serious, you know, like in or really serious in the sense that it's going to leave him out so long. They don't even want his name mentioned, but it also could just be they're giving him time off for some other reason, and storyline-wise, he's going to come back when Roman does. So that is weird that it's just not brought up on SmackDown. That's the odd part. You know, like, why not at least address it unless, again, I missed it. And if you didn't, and that's why I'm asking, if you didn't hear them mention it and I didn't, then I think that they probably just decided to not address it, which, you know, it's kind of lame. You know, I think viewers would want to hear, just say, you know, come up with some real or kayfabe explanation, some storyline explanation for it. So,
They might down the line, like we might find out if the new deal is like Solo thinks he's like Reigns now, maybe we find out that he ordered Heyman to, you know, use his power to make sure Jimmy didn't get drafted. Like they can retcon that.
Yeah. But I mean,
they can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Paul Heyman thought this through. You know, I don't always have faith. Everybody, every wrestler at every level of WWE has a chance to express themselves or think through this stuff and be heard. Paul Heyman's got clout, and he certainly has thought of this. So there was some deliberate reason not to bring him up, and we may or may not find out why. But either they had a non-storyline reason or storyline reason to just not bring him up, not draw attention to him, but to say the bloodline. And then to list three people, Heyman, Tonga, and Sokoa, and just act like Jimmy's not part of it now when you only address Rowan being gone is weird. So then finally, in segment three, round three here, Raw's fifth pick, Sheamus. No big deal there. AJ Styles going pretty low for the guy challenging for the title next weekend. He comes in at pick number six in the final fourth and final segment of the show, with Raw then picking Chad Gable and the rest of, at least for now, Alpha Academy. And then Andrade is SmackDown's final pick tonight, and Kiara James from NXT, Raw's final and seventh and final pick. Alex, your thoughts on that, and then we will shift to calls.
Yeah, the Alpha Academy thing was weird. That felt like a way for them to finish up that story, especially with them being drafted as a group. Like, they easily could have drafted just Chad Gable and done the rest of them like on WWE.com or something, and nobody would have noticed. So I think that's, again, just a way to further that story. Otherwise, the rest of what went here kind of is what it is. Like, they just brought Sheamus back, and without explaining it to anybody, Sheamus showed up on Raw, and he got drafted to SmackDown last year, so technically he should have been back on SmackDown. So they weren't going to move him back when they, like, already did that. And then beyond that, everything else is just kind of filler. Like, the female call up from NXT is fine. I don't know enough about her, but I'm sure they'll find something for her to do on Raw. I assume she's a heel based on the gimmick, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Good. I don't want to leave our callers on hold too much longer here, but I did definitely want to get through the draft portion, get our thoughts on it to kick things off in the first segment of this show. So with that done, let's go to Mike in Hershey, PA. Mike, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. Good to talk to you. What's in your mind about tonight's episode of SmackDown?
Hey, what's going on, Wade? It's great to talk to you guys. Trying to find a hole in my schedule since my WrestleMania 40 experience in Philly. Attending was a dream come true. And part of the reason why watching tonight was kind of fun. Listen, you guys have been talking a lot about Carmelo, and two reasons why I loved the Carmelo pick. Number one would just be a sentimental reason probably going on here, because it was fun to watch with my son, because we as part of our WrestleMania experience in Philly, we bought the tickets to the WWE World, and we just kind of went in there like just looking to kill some time on like Sunday in the city before the evening show. But we're just walking around, didn't pay anything extra for any like superstar experiences or, you know, autograph sessions. And out of nowhere, I just saw Carmelo Anthony walking across the, you know, kind of like through the crowd. And I picked him out, and I was
Carmelo
like, hey,
Hayes
Carmelo.
Or Carmelo Anthony?
Why did I say Carmelo Anthony? My gosh, Carmelo Hayes, Carmelo Hayes. It's easy, isn't it? Sorry, it's easy to say that. Yeah.
That's all right.
Carmelo Hayes. So I picked him out, and he graciously took a picture with my son. And my son is not a big NXT watcher or anything like that, but he's become a Carmelo fan. So it was cool not only that he got picked tonight, but you know, that he got to main event against Cody, who's basically every kid's favorite at this point. So that's number one. But number two, here's the thing. If you think about it, I got a lot of vibes from this. I got a lot of like John Cena, ruthless aggression, Kurt Angle vibes from that whole interaction. Just sort of like the reason why I like the pick, knowing of obviously that this is all, you know, within, you know, the picks are the picks. I think there's going to be a lot of free agency that makes a lot of, you know, makes this interesting going forward, especially with the champions staying where they are. But, you know, you pick Carmelo Hayes, and he's going to be a big deal. You establish him as someone who is seen with a bright future. I know, yeah, he loses against, you know, Cody in a main event, but I mean, John Cena lost against Kurt Angle and that night, and everybody remembers it 20 years later, if that's how long it is, mm-hmm. 15, 20 years later. And I feel like it's just something when you look at it years from now, I think when Carmelo Hayes is, you know, a bigger star, we'll be looking back at that moment, you know, when he said he shot his, you know, he's going to shoot his shot against the champ. So that's my take on that. Any reaction to that? I mean, does it give that a different perspective as to what you guys thought?
I think there's a difference, and Alex will throw you right after saying this, between sort of an unknown guy to a great degree coming out and going, hey, I want to take you on, and having a match and losing, versus a highly coveted draft pick who's been a star on national cable television, who enters, is drafted higher than people anticipated. They make a really big deal out of it in two ways. One, it goes against people's draft board expectations, and two, they think Carmelo's a future star, but then you just give away the match for somebody who is more established and picked high. And I don't know that parallels enough the Cena example. Alex, what do you think though? I mean, there's something to that. I mean, I think that probably there are elements of what they did tonight wanting to get a similar reaction, if not inspired by that. But I think there's some key differences that do change it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Cena was a guy from OVW, which if you read wrestling magazines or lived in that area, you knew who the prototype was. But outside of that very small niche group of people, the national audiences didn't. And at the time, Kurt Angle was regarded as not just like a top guy, but legitimately like one of the best workers in the country. So there was that. And again, this guy was a total unknown, came out in the most generic, you know, wrestler attire ever and said his name. And then, you know, they went from there and they did the whole deal with Undertaker after the fact too. Hayes has been on SmackDown before.
Yeah.
And like even taking the NXT thing out of it, because like, I don't watch NXT. I know what's going on and I know who's there and have a vague idea of who's coming up and whether they're good and somebody I should watch or not. But for the most part, when somebody's on Raw or SmackDown for the first time, it's the first time I've seen them. So they had an opportunity to make that impression tonight, but unfortunately they blew that because the guy had meaningless matches with Austin Theory and Kevin Owens on SmackDown like a month ago or 2 months ago. Like, I think the last time I was on with you, Wade, was the show where Theory and Hayes had that weird spot that they stopped the match, and like all of that just happened.
Yeah.
So if they hadn't have done that, I think this would have worked better. But again, it, to your point, like it's not really the same thing.
Mike, what do you think of our response?
Yeah, well, guys, let me pick myself off the floor here because I just got destroyed. No, I'm kidding. I appreciate the honestly, like that's, I love the back and forth. And yes, I mean, I definitely a different time, a different place, you know, a different era. I feel like when you look at it from the standpoint of, like you said, you know, there, I'd love to think that everybody, we all just watch all these shows all the time, but I know so many people who, and you know, this is just living life. It's you'll find this kind of funny, but like when I told people I was going to WrestleMania, and I've been a lifelong fan, so for me, WrestleMania means something. You know, WrestleMania is the, you know, the show of shows, you know, the showcase of the immortals. It, when I told just people at work, hey guys, I'm going to WrestleMania this weekend, and believe me, I was telling everyone. They were like, "Oh, that's so cool! I went to WrestleMania when I was a kid, you know, here in and like they would describe basically a house show, or like when WrestleMania came to our local arena, and they thought that was, you know, WWE came to our local arena just for a, you know, like a taping of Saturday Night's Main Event or something when we were kids. Like most people don't understand. I feel like." That's the perspective I'm coming from. They thought WrestleMania was just going to, you know, your local arena on a Monday night or a, you know, a Saturday night back in the day. They don't understand there's 72,000 people, two nights, taking over a city. That's WrestleMania, you know. They thought WrestleMania was just the house show. They don't understand. So
yeah.
To that point, to that scale, those people, they have no idea what NXT is. And you take it down a level, and okay, Carmelo Hayes has been on, you know, he's been on the show before, but like Tuesday night's not mainstream. So I feel like having him come out tonight, that was where I was kind of looking at it from a perspective of just the young up-and-comer shooting a shot, taking the chance against an established megastar, Cody Rhodes, a.k.a. Cena back in the day, the prototype, you know, coming up against an established megastar, Kurt Angle. I got a little bit of a vibe there. I do see the differences, and I appreciate that. So that's my reaction to it. Just to put it in that perspective, and we get away from our super fan, you know, perspective and think about what other people think, I think Carmelo is brand new for a lot of people tonight. So I think putting him in a main event is one of those moments they might draw back on in years to come.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the logic behind the decision to do what they did. Doesn't mean there aren't going to be some differences. You know, I mean, he was
for sure
on. Yeah. He fought Austin Theory twice on SmackDown in the last 6 months.
Yep.
He was in the U.S. title tournament last year, lost to Finn Balor. I mean, he's been around, but if the idea is he's just now coming to his own, he's entering the phase of his career where he can really take off. to me, I just don't know that losing to Cody Rhodes sent that message. I get what they're doing. I would have wanted to talk that through to be sure that we wanted to establish that out of the gate and define him down from some other way of defining him when he is right. That high of a draft pick. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just finishing the thought on that draft, you know, drafting on potential, I guess. And a guy who comes in a little too cocky and he's somewhat humbled and he didn't end the night as a heel. He shook the hand and he sat there on the ring apron looking up like, what could have been? Maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, maybe a little bit of regret in his eyes.
Yeah.
So the only other thing I wanted to, you know, ask you guys about was Carlito turn tonight. The thoughts on that. Number one, I would say the biggest thing that caught me as a viewer was how giant Carlito looks compared to the rest of the LWO. You've got, you know, yeah. These guys are like, and I don't know how big Carlito really is, but you know, he is much larger than Rey and Zelina for sure, and Dragon Lee. But other than that, I mean, do you guys? I think Carlito's been kind of DOA since his reintroduction. Wondering if you guys think that, you know, this could be a spark that they need to bring him in and what his potential is. Will he be teaming up with the other side, you know, or will he just sort of be, you know, what his motivations were? And other than that, guys, I'll sit back and listen. I appreciate it. Love the show. And I'll talk to you guys later.
Great. Yep. Thanks. Good topics. So first of all, Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee standing with their backs to Carlito, watching the footage. And then still standing there, not turning around to shoot a look at Carlito so that he could take his time attacking them from behind was something, if it were pre-taped, I would yell take two. I thought that was dumb. They also went into a close-up of Rey when it was revealed that they were going to air actual security footage. And that was at the exclusion of Carlito. And I kind of wish we had a shot of Carlito looking worried behind Rey right before the footage aired, or, you know, trying to protest it airing or telling Rey, don't even look, this isn't worth or something. And instead it felt like the production team was in cahoots to exclude the most compelling aspect of it, which was, again, Carlito panicking before the footage aired. So want to throw those two things out there. Carlito ran out through the crowd after the footage was aired and it was revealed it was Carlito who attacked Dragon Lee. And he escaped through the crowd. So he didn't leave with Legado. Alex, what are your top talking points from this in response to what Mike said about, in particular, where you think this puts Carlito in terms of what they can do with him?
So Mike's question was about Carlito teaming with Legado or being a part of Legado. That would be really odd because Santos Escobar kicked his ass and they all like stood over him last week. Which, if they were going to do this today, that was an odd choice because Carlito was made to look like basically a joke. And then they turn around and run this angle the week after. The other part too, and it could be what you're talking about, that like Carlito didn't protest or act like he was surprised at all or anything, or the fact that like Rey Mysterio is the dumbest babyface this side of Sting, where all of his friends just turn on him and he doesn't realize that he might be the problem. Like, that whole thing fell totally flat in the crowd. Like, when they showed the footage, you didn't hear a gasp or any notion of like, oh, no, not Carlito. It was like everybody got the spoiler ahead of time that it was him. It, like, they may as well have shown that footage on their website like 4 days ago or like email blasted it to everybody the way it went over with the audience. Like, nobody was surprised at all. And sometimes that's not a bad thing, but in this case, it just ended up making Rey look really dumb. The other part, too, is like the footage didn't make it seem like Dragon Lee couldn't figure out who beat him up. So why didn't he just tell Rey that, like, Carlito beat him up?
Right.
So
I mean, I guess it's sort of fun to, if you don't think you can just show the footage and have hard evidence and not have it be one word against another, I guess.
I mean, I guess, but what? Why did it take Electra Lopez 3 weeks to get the thing, and why is that her job? Like,
yeah,
she has
investigative skills or persistence we didn't know about. What do you think of Carlito? Just like as a heel now, do you want him to be alone? Do you want him to? Do you think he has a significant upside? Do we not have a big enough sample size? Just how about that aspect of things?
I don't know. I feel like they brought him back and had an idea in the beginning, but somewhere along the line, that idea fell by the wayside and they decided, you know, to do the stuff with Dragon Lee and Andrade. And I'm sure the explanation for this is going to be, you know, Carlito's feelings got hurt because Rey Mysterio chose Dragon Lee, and then he thought he could beat up Dragon Lee and then get picked, and then Rey still picked somebody else. Like, I'm sure it's going to be some, you know, heel justification of that nature. I just think everything Carlito's done has been really underwhelming. Like, I was a big fan of his when he came in, what was that, 04, 05? Mm-hmm. And I thought he had a brighter future than how things turned out. There was a bunch of reasons for that, but I don't know. I feel like they brought back a guy who things didn't work out for the first time because he was kind of uninspired, and now it's like they're super surprised that he's older, not as athletic as he used to be, and, oh, by the way, not super inspired. Like, I just feel like they shouldn't be surprised by this.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes, precisely. All right, cool. Our number, if you want to still be part of the show, you can call us if you're live streaming us here on Friday night, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1, 347-215-8558. All right, we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
All right, well, Wade, I will say first, no spoilers because Minnesota just started, so no spoilers. It's early. But
I don't like talking about it on the show because I don't trust people not to email or call if they go deep in the playoffs if we talk about it every show. So I just like – I hate not to be able to talk about it, but because we do this late at night and it's often overlapping the Timberwolves and I'm hoping they go deep in the playoffs, the more I talk about it, the more likely it is people spoil it for me. So I am in a blackout zone even acknowledging that I'm a Wolves fan.
Okay.
That's my only safeguard. So you can email me spoiler free, but I don't even like drawing attention on the show. If it weren't for the fact that hopefully they're going to go deep in a lot of the games or head to head with the post show, then it'd be different. So.
Gotcha.
I'm not mad. I'm just laying out the ground. Yeah.
No. That's fair. So with the Carmella thing really fast, because I had just a side point I wanted to bring a little bit different to it, is from the aspect of, you know, I would have been okay, like Alex had been saying earlier, I would have been okay if Carmella, first-round draft pick, if he hadn't have been on the show before, and he'd already been kind of defined down. And to me, when he came out on the promo side tonight, he never said, I want you tonight. He never said, hey, I want you in a match tonight. He just said, I want to shoot my shot, and I want it to be against you. He never said tonight whatever. And then, and then Cody's like, hey, do you want a match tonight? And I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm like, no, because like you said, why would you put that on TV right away? And to me, Carmelo got really no offense, and to me, he got – kind of squashed almost, and to me that's where he gets to find down even more than he already was. So that's kind of where my thought was on it, and I'm like, oh, you've already really hurt Carmelo really bad. And you know, can he come back from it? Yeah, because he's still young and he still has a high upside, but I don't think they did it the right way tonight at all. And going back to the draft tonight, I thought it was fine. Like, I did like when they had the before they came out, or there is Bubba Ray and all the guys were coming out, they had, you know, the picks are in, which I thought that was cool. They haven't done that before. It's a nice little touch with the draft, you know, the NFL draft. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Now, when they went back to the war rooms, or you know, they didn't yeah, they weren't as corny as they were back initially when the draft first happened, but they still, like, you know, were getting excited when they get – and the NFL doesn't do that. They just go to the war rooms when they're talking about stuff. They don't go when they get the pick and they're like, oh, yeah, this is great. We got this guy. And it's just like, okay, that I don't like when they do that part of it.
I have seen footage of that, like the Timberwolves when they got Carl Anthony Towns. But that was more the – maybe that was getting number one in the draft lottery when they won the lottery to get the first pick. Maybe that's when there was a live reaction shot. That might be what I'm remembering. And sometimes there's, you know, handheld footage of that kind of thing that goes around. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and so what did you think also too? I wanted to bring up about when they brought up, you know, the NXT and they showed the Performance Center. To me, I wanted to hear what you guys thought, but I didn't really love it because to me, in NXT, you're all competing against each other. Yeah, you're happy for each other, like, behind closed doors, but you're not, like, all together, like, oh, look at us, one of our people got drafted, we're so excited. I don't like that. Am I way off base? What did you think about how they did that tonight, Jackie being at the Performance Center?
So, yeah, they definitely look at NXT, Alex, like a college campus. You know, we're getting on a bus, we're traveling to a show. Everyone show up at this time, we're going to train, and then we're going to perform. I just don't know if it's great to have that image of this is like college basketball and Raw and SmackDown are like the NBA, for that to be on the, you know, sort of the canon of the on-air presentation. And to what Sean is saying, they're competitors. They're not like teammates. Obviously, you know, people compete for positions on college teams, but they're teammates or basketball teams or, you know, sports teams. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, pretty intense feuds going on in pro wrestling. And here they are all sitting around, you know, cheering on people moving to the next level. So I don't have super strong feelings on it. Probably I had stronger feelings in the past on that. And it's softened over time just because you kind of get beat out of it gets beaten out of you caring about certain things that you think would be good. Cause it's sort of like, you know, cat's out of the bag. It's, you know, you just can't undo it. And I sort of feel that way about NXT at this point. It's not what I would have done at any point. I think less damage is done now each successive time because they've already done it. And people see NXT for what it is. It is kind of like a college developmental campus. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself into just, you know, being okay with not being outraged and also being okay despite my reservations. Alex, how about you?
It's one of the last, like, remaining vestiges of, like, the original drafts they did where they would have, like, the Raw and SmackDown locker rooms and people who are feuding with each other are all sitting there together. It just reminds me of that. It's, like, the last part of that that's left. And I guess NXT is the thing that it makes the most sense to do that with.
Mm-hmm.
If they insist on doing that, though, I wish that they would point out, like, pick their biggest heel. Like Tiffany Stratton would have been good for this when she was still there. But there should be one person or two people who refuse to show up because they hate everybody there and they don't care who gets picked besides them. Like, if they turned it into a way to make one person look like an asshole, it would work a lot better, but they don't take that opportunity. So it comes off as, like, really weird that they're all just like, oh, that guy used to work here, and now he works there. Good for him. Like, I'm so happy for him that he got promoted instead of me. Like, in general, real people don't act like that either because it's not the same as, like, college where there's people that aren't eligible to be drafted. Like, obviously they're going to be happy for their teammate that is eligible, as opposed to the NXT thing where everybody is eligible, so why would you be happy for somebody getting promoted over you?
Right. I mean, I guess some people know it's not their time. You know, it's like someone who's going to be drafted in the eighth round of the NFL draft doesn't resent the first round pick who everyone knew was going earlier. So you can, like, but in terms of people who are competitive for that at the top level, you would want the reactions to match, I'm a heel, they're a face. And or I'm a face, they're a heel, they got drafted ahead of me, and I feel I should have been. You want some of that at the top level. I think I can, you know, I'm fine with it not happening with some new person or, you know, person who clearly is a year or two away from this being their moment.
No, I agree. But they just have opportunities to do stuff like that, and they don't take it. And it is
right, absolutely. Yeah.
It just is weird that they all sit in this room. And the other part of it, too, is like the kayfabe part of it, of like you're drafting people from NXT, but nobody ever drafts the champion. Like, what? Like, that's stupid, too. Like, they should just leave them out of it and do the organic call-out because it's dumb. It's like not drafting the Heisman Trophy winner in football. Like, it's happened before, but it's not often.
No, oh, I know. And I mentioned on the Wade Keller Hotline earlier for VIP members, I don't think there's a perfect solution to not drafting the champions, because the champion should be who Aldis and Pierce want. But they're the champions, and they're just beginning storylines of some of these champions. They don't want them to be called up. So the draft just gets in the way of this NXT universe, so to speak, because you have this conundrum. So if you say champions aren't eligible, that some people would say, well, that's the obvious thing, right? Well, then why would you want to be NXT champion come draft time? You would intentionally lose the title so that you could get promoted like Bo Dallas did when he got called up after losing the NXT title going way back. So it's an imperfect situation, and I think the best solution, Alex, is what you said. Do call-ups in a different way, have a completely different system. It doesn't have to be a system. It can be they just get called up randomly. When Shawn Michaels decides as coach, they're ready. They're ready to move up. So Nick, he puts in a group text or call to Nick and Adam and says, hey, guys, I think this man or woman's ready. When you're ready for them, take them. I'm proud to see them off. You can tell that story, too. That at least would make sense compared to not drafting the very best if you want to make – if you're a GM for Raw or SmackDown and you want the very best wrestlers. So, but again, if they exclude the champions from it, you create a disincentive to be champion, or you make people who just want a title look potentially foolish, or at least like they're missing out. They're being punished for their victories.
Well, and that's why I keep bringing up the Bron Breakker thing, because to me, the whole like – this guy's coming up from NXT, and then you have the GMs fighting over who gets the right to sign him. That made him exponentially a larger deal than these guys that just get drafted randomly, who, again, aren't the champions. Like, again, from a total kayfabe perspective, not looking at who's ready, who's not, all that stuff, isn't Trick Williams better than Carmelo Hayes? So, like, why would you take the lesser person?
I guess sometimes people in the Heisman Trophy who aren't seen as likely to be as big of NFL stars, but they had just a great year because of their system and the games they played and how they were showcased. And so, you know, I'm trying to extend that analogy out. You know, you might say, well, somebody happens to be champion, but the ex-champ we know is more ready. They just had an off night or whatever. But again, you just solve all this by not having NXT in the draft. And I'd be fine with that. I don't think it adds anything significant that makes up for the downside. Obviously, they have thought through all this and they feel differently. And they think we're just sticklers for things that don't matter. Or maybe it causes Triple H angst. He just doesn't, you know, he might be as bothered by it as we are, but ultimately he thinks the positive outweigh the negative. And, you know, that's probably the scenario. With Vince McMahon, I think he just didn't care enough to want to think it through. Go ahead, Sean.
Overall, Carmelo's better than Trick, honestly. I mean, Trick's more over because of his song, but I think Carmelo's more talented in the ring. He's just as good on the mic. It's not better. I mean, they just defined him down. I mean, I don't think it's his fault. I think it's what WWE's done to him so far. I mean, Alex, I mean, that's fine. If you think Trick's better, that's because of the champion. That's okay. But I think as a talent, I think Carmelo's maybe more talented than Trick is. But, then, you know, I mean, Trick's got a lot of upside. I like Trick, too. But,
well, we'll see where they are in 3 years. Yeah, I mean, some of it is you draft, you know, like the Falcons. They drafted a quarterback, even though they got Kirk Cousins, because they think maybe in 3 years he'll be ready. And, you know, the Vikings signed a quarterback, even though they drafted one, and that their draft pick might wait a year before he starts. You know, it depends on a lot of things. So there's, you know, sometimes people aren't ready, but you covet them more because you don't need them yet. But whatever. I mean, you know, people get that. But it doesn't solve the issue completely with the NXT conundrum and, you know, not taking the champions and what that says about who your champions are. I mean, no matter how much we kind of, come up with some convoluted explanation for, you know, Carmelo's more ready and Trick is a long-term project, blah, 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 and quality of opposition and taking the whole last year into account. I get all that. It's just I don't think it serves the draft really well because you can't get into that. They don't have a panel discussion that can talk about it on air like we do and have it kind of make sense in the way that they present what they're doing.
Yeah, I do agree with that for sure. And then going back to – and that was hard when they said the champions were, you know, staying where they were, which, I mean, I get in theory. But in my mind, I'm like, I want Becky to move and I want Bayley to move because, number one, they're not – it's not, quote-unquote, Raw and SmackDown champions anymore. So you don't really have that
right.
going against it. And it's like I want fresh matchups for people. And they're just on the same place where they're just, you know, if you don't move a lot of people over, which they didn't tonight, which they could do Monday, but, you know – going into the Nia Jax thing, which I'm with you guys, I do think her moving to SmackDown will help. But again, going back to the match tonight, I hated her interfering in the match. You have a number one contender's match, Naomi Tiffany, and you just ruined the match. And it's like, oh my gosh, Triple H has to get out of this conundrum. There's got to be a better way to do this. What'd you think of that? And where do you think they're going with the number one contender? Like, who do you think they're going to go with at Backlash?
They did announce late in the show, Sean, that it's just going to be a three-way, that we can't – too much is going on, so it's just going to be Naomi and Tiffany and Bayley. Alex, over to you.
So on the Hayes thing, I agree with what you're saying, Sean, but I'm talking about purely if you leave all that behind and just look at it from a kayfabe perspective of – this guy versus this guy, the one guy's the champion, the other guy's not. And the other guy came out and the whole crowd cheered for the other guy. So that's all I'm getting at. You're right. As far as like the meta side of it, Hayes is better, but kayfabe perspective, it's probably a trick. Beyond that, the women's title situation ended up exactly where I figured it would. This is clearly a way to get Stratton involved, and this way Naomi can take the loss. Fully expect Stratton's going to end up with Money in the Bank, and that's where all this is leading, where she's going to continue to try to get title shots and by underhanded means, and then finally she's going to get her hands on the briefcase and win the title by the most underhanded means. That's just kind of where I think they're going with it, and they're setting it up by doing stuff like this in the meantime.
Sean, anything else?
Yeah, I was going to say, I hate the way they go to three ways. I don't know. Like, it's fine. You know, that's the way they do it. And Tiffany, I'm with you guys on her winning Money in the Bank is the right way to go. It's just a sloppy way to get there. It's like, Naomi's going to – we just know what's going to happen. And it's fine. The match is going to be good for what it is. Tiffany's going to get over more, which I think – you know, which I'm excited about. But I just don't like the way they get there. But wait, I will say, I have not heard it yet. I'm excited. I saw it tonight because this has been a long weekend so far. But I saw where Todd is going on an F-bomb-laced rant. I can't wait. Guys, you got to love the Fix, man. Get on the Fix. Todd, you know, is just fantastic. Just, if you want good rants, Todd Martin always has a great rant, and I'm always here for it, no matter where it is, who it is, about anything. It's great. Alex, I've always enjoyed your show, man, with Patrick. That's going really well. I always enjoy that, man. I appreciate you guys taking my call. It's always fun to be on with you guys.
Thank you, Sean. I knew that that headline about Todd's epic rant would stir some conversation. It has on social media and here with Sean. Cool. All right. Let's go to New Hampshire. Air code 603. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sure can.
I'm actually in California, but I'm English originally. I have a New Hampshire number. My name's Rivers.
Oh, sure.
I'm a longtime fan. And I think this is the first time I've actually called into a live show. So,
Yeah,
but long time fan. I think we've communicated before over on Twitter as well. I'm surprised how negative you guys are on this presentation of the draft. But I think it's because as a European, we don't really have sports drafts. So I don't really have an idea of the ideal one of what it should be. But I really appreciated this version of the draft over any other incarnation of the draft that I've seen. I think when in wrestling they act as if it is a real event, it is better, and which seems weird to say in wrestling because that's kind of the whole point. But this wasn't just, you know, we do it this way because it's pro wrestling. There seems to be some thought gone into it of, if this was 100% legitimate, how would it work? Now, I don't think they pulled it off 100%, mm-hmm. but like I said, I don't really know what sports draft would look like. But I really liked this and thought it was a huge step forward. And I will say I was wondering how they're going to deal with the champions, because all the belts now aesthetically match each show. You have like the big gold-looking belts, and then you have the big WWE-looking belts on the other side. So I wondered how they were going to do it, and seemingly they just came up with the simplest answer of, yeah, the champions don't move.
It is the simplest answer. It's ironic, Alex, they do that right after taking the Raw and SmackDown branding off the belts, which was the previous complication. So they actually made it easier if they wanted to do that. But, yeah, I mean, you covered it earlier, Alex, but any additional thoughts on the decision to lock the champions down? Because obviously, as you talked about, it takes away some of the top stars from being able to be drafted, which then takes away some of the drama, but it eliminates the awkwardness of, you know, if one champ is taken, then the other one has to be taken. Otherwise, both champs can end up on one brand, and then what do you do?
Yeah, I truly think that a really large part of this was not wanting to draft, you know, say Bayley over Bianca, or more specifically, Damian Priest over like mm-hmm. 10 other people.
Right.
Like I really think it has more to do with that than anything else.
Rivers, what else?
Well, I need you to tell me that Cody's shoulder is okay, because he took an awkward-looking bump, and then he was either selling really well or it looked like he had hurt it, and I just felt my stomach drop, because if, you know, he was injured or anything like that, it would just be devastating. So I assume you guys don't know yet if it was all for show or is legitimately injured.
Did you notice that, Alex? I was kind of busy wrapping up my report.
So they did the double like springboard cross body shot, and Cody landed hard. And I actually had the same thought for a second that he might be hurt. The reason that I kind of came off that and figured he was fine was the amount of time that he talked to Trick after the fact. And then the fact that they still went with the angle with Styles afterwards. I think if he had been actually hurt, they wouldn't have done all that. And you notice too, like if Cody's shoulder was actually hurt, he wouldn't have got up on the second rope and raised the belt above his head, because there's no way that that would have been safe. Or, you know, if he like separated his shoulder, he wouldn't have been able to do that physically anyway. So I assume he's fine, and he was just playing it as, you know, Hayes hurt me, but I beat him kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it hurts.
I thought for a second you might be right. I didn't have, like, the oh no response that you did, but I did think for a second that maybe he was hurt.
Well, the downside is he's selling his right shoulder, and they always sell left shoulders. So that's one concern.
That's true.
You know, and sometimes, you know, something that's, you know, dislocate, pop back in, and it just, you know, it's going to ache and it's going to affect things. But he can get through a match. It didn't seem to, you know, the way he worked through it didn't make it seem like it's anything just clearly debilitating. And where my point is, maybe there's some minor injury that isn't huge, but I don't know. I mean, pain thresholds and what injuries that people work through sometimes, followed by, ooh, the pain really kicks in later, and then they realize they actually do need to take time off. That happens, so I'm not ruling it out. But it, like I said, I'm, you know, typing up my report at the end of the show, getting ready for the post show. It didn't jump out to me. We're like, oh, I need to check on this right away.
That's good. Well, a couple more things. Yeah. I'll rush through it. Are you guys at all concerned about Triple H's presence. Like, each one of his appearances has been totally justifiable.
Yeah.
Like, you have WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. You have Night 2. Cody asked him to come out. You have Raw after Mania. Makes sense. Then we have new belts to introduce. So that makes sense. And now we have the draft. So it's like, that makes sense. But are you getting worried? Because after WrestleMania, I was thinking, I would be happy if he just wasn't on for another 2 months. Like, if I just didn't see him. And I'm a fan of his, but I was around for that Reign of Terror where he was all over the show. And I know he has that in him to kind of feed off the attention, perhaps. So I was just wondering if you guys are worried about that. Also, you can put me on mute after this, but I just want to say, I know, Wade, you like to know how people listen to, you know, the pro version and when they got into it. I remember exactly where I was and when. I was getting ready to go to my first WrestleMania. It was WrestleMania 28 in Miami. And I was always a fan of kind of the backstage stuff with wrestling. But I thought, you know what, this is the WrestleMania I'm going to. I'm going to fully immerse myself in everything I can find out so I can fully enjoy WrestleMania. I downloaded the Top 10 Wrestling podcast, got on a treadmill, listened to 10 minutes of Colt Cabana's podcast, wasn't for me, went over to your podcast. I think it was you and Bruce. And since then, I was hooked, and it's weird to think, looking back at the 12 years since then, how many countries I've been in, how many people I've met, and you have been there as a weekly presence, if not daily, and I just want to thank you. Looking back, it's weird to think how much I've listened to you.
Well, that's a great story. It's great talking to you. Thank you for sharing that. Was I the second podcast you listened to? Did you ever make it to 3 through 10?
I didn't need to. I found the podcast for me.
I love it.
I just remember turning off Colt and thinking, I'll try this one.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Colt and I do is very different, but that's cool. Super cool story. That is awesome. Thank you. And it's good to talk to you. Yeah. It's weird how many people I'm in their ear for years. And, you know, obviously we never get to talk or interact much other than, you know, maybe social media or an email or something like that. So after all this time for you to call up and be part of the show, it's fun. And I appreciate you sharing that.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Have a good night.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, everybody. We also love accents. You know, Jason from Australia, and we get an English accent here. Cool stuff. Anything you want to add to anything, Alex, there?
No, we can move on.
Yeah. So let's go to Zach in Texas's email. I'm honestly surprised the draft doesn't drive Wade completely crazy. It's totally lacking any logic. The NFL draft started last night. All 32 teams didn't empty their rosters to draft whole new teams. There aren't draft pools for each night. It's farcical to call it a draft. They need to go back to the superstar shakeup name and show Pearson all this negotiating trades in the back. Once they reach an agreement, they can announce the trade. Do that like 4 times. So you're trading 8 people on each show, gets 2 picks from NXT. That makes more sense than what they're doing now. I'm bearing a lead, though. Has an AEW question, which I don't know if we want to get to here on the show. So what do you think about that idea of having everything done ahead of time and then revealing them, which has been a variation in the past, and then revealing them after the fact to the audience, but not actually doing a draft, but rather just negotiating trades rather than throwing everybody into a pool? The benefit to that, sort of in a storyline sense, is that you don't have to worry about, oh, that person got drafted ahead of that person, there's hurt feelings, or it sends a message to fans we don't want to send, but it's a practical thing to do. You just have, you know, I mean, you have the politics of trades, you know, which is, you know, who does management think I'm equal to? You know, if it's a 2-for-1, am I insulted if I'm one of the two who go for one, that kind of thing. I don't agree with Zach saying, you know, the draft pool makes it farcical. I mean, I think it totally makes sense. It feels rather randomized, you know, 40% of the wrestlers on Friday, 60% on Raw, reflecting the hours of TV. And the emptying of the rosters makes sense in the sense that it's not a team sport. And, Raw and SmackDown are two shows, and they have GMs who just want to have a great show, and it's a way to freshen things up. I, I, I'm fine with that as a premise. So no, those things that Zach brought up don't drive me nuts. Alex, how about you?
I'm fine with how he laid it out. I was cool with them doing it this way, as far as they actually had protected people. But the problem with having a set of protected people arises when you don't pick anybody new. And I think that's what hurt tonight. And I just feel like they can never find a happy medium with these. Like, I like Zach's idea, as long as we don't go back to the worst iteration of this was when they did the randomizer thing and the screen just quote unquote randomly rolled through people. Like that was the worst version of it. The best was probably when they had like a match on Raw or SmackDown and then that brand got a draft pick and then the GM chose somebody. And really only like, I don't know, 8 or 10 people total switched sides. That was good because you kept the integrity of both shows, but you got enough switches. Like, I still think the best one to this day was, I think it was 05, where Raw got like Carlito and Cena and Angle, and SmackDown got like Christian, Batista, Benoit. Like that made sense. And it felt like for the most part, the people they were moving back and forth were equal, and how they got there made sense as far as like, well, if you could take somebody from the other guy, who would you take? But again, you end up with each side only gets like 4 picks. So it's not like you're changing everybody, because that was the big problem last year was we have people who it feels like they just get drafted to the opposite show over and over and over again. Like the big ones that come to mind are AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Kevin Owens, who get drafted like to the opposite show every draft over and over again. So it just feels like they can't come up with a happy medium between the two to where it's not totally random and we're not like just switching people to switch people, but at the same time, like, have some movement that matters. Like, it's just, it's a hard problem to solve. And at the end of the day, the best solution might be, maybe don't do it every year. Do it, like, every year and a half or 2 years. Maybe that would help. But I don't know. I just don't think there's a perfect solution.
Yeah, yeah. He also talks about Nick Khan selling his TKO stock, and that's just that's not exactly a SmackDown topic, and I want to get more information on it and what it means. So Zach will look at that another time. Over to Azan in St. Louis. He says, greetings, Wade and Alex. Currently, Tiffany should be the focal point of SmackDown's women's scene, and you can build up Belair or Jade to take the belt from her. As for Bayley, she seems less confident lately for some reason to me. What do you make of Bayley's character post turn and damage control? And, you know, there's still some kind of, she did ding dong hello. There's some lines talking about her, what's her catchphrase right now? Kind of heelish, just very cocky. It slips my mind. But what are you thinking about how she's presenting herself? And you can talk about Tiffany too, if you want.
Bayley right now is the female version of Seth Rollins, where she's the exact same person, never really changed much.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden she's a face.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's still doing all of the same stuff she was doing before. The only difference is she doesn't have a group of cronies beating people up for her. It's really, really awkward. And I'm a big fan of hers, but they need to like go in a totally different direction. They tried to change the music, and if anything, they made her music more heelish than it was before. So that was kind of a fail.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And they did the same thing with her appearance, like with the shaved side of her head. Like, I think she looks more like a heel now than she did, you know, 2 months ago. It's just, she's in a weird spot, but she's at that point now where she's a legacy star. And let's be honest, most of them don't go through radical changes at this stage in their career. And she's much closer to the back end than she is the beginning. And that's what's interesting about you know, the emailer brings up Tiffany Stratton, and we have Jade Cargill. They called up the woman from NXT tonight. Like, they clearly are well aware of the fact that the old guard is nearing the end. Like, we never see Charlotte. Becky just got the Randy Orton title win because they don't have anybody else to put it on. So here's another one for you. And Bailey's winding down. Like, Belair's been around for a while. She'll be the new, you know, veteran. But they're clearly positioning themselves with the next crop, with Tiffany and Cargill and Rhea and so on. Like, that's coming much sooner rather than later.
All right, with Kiana James coming to Raw, who would you give her first feud to? She has abilities and character to become a top star one day. I don't want to answer that yet until we just see where everything falls on Raw on Monday in terms of who to feud her with. I have no thoughts on that yet. Alex, any thoughts in terms of who we know is going to be on SmackDown at this point? Or, I'm sorry, who we know is going to be on Raw?
She squashes Liv Morgan over and over again.
There we go. With these QR codes, do you feel a sense of hype for Bo Dallas at all? Bo has decreased year over year during his first WWE run. I mean, it feels like it's going to be Bo Dallas related. They, you know, totally fits, you know, the timing of the documentary coming out with Bo having a prominent role in the Bray documentary on Peacock. And it's, you know, a little slow build. You know, obviously, he's not eligible for the draft, whatever's going on with that. Alex, any thoughts on this gimmick and what do you think about it?
I actually watched that documentary this week, so it's really fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
I fully expect this to be Bo Dallas. There's people on the internet breaking it down, so there's that. Yeah. And it feels like they're going down the same rabbit hole they did before. Not only that, but at the end of the documentary, if you want to read into it, there is like a post credits or during credits. I don't know how you want to take it, but
yeah.
There's a very serious teaser for Uncle Howdy, Bo Dallas at the end, if you happen to watch through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's on the horizon just based on all that.
Yeah. Looking at the rest of SmackDown tonight, is there anything else you want to bring up, Alex?
What else happened? We talked about Hayes.
Kevin Owens. Brawl.
Oh, what? I can't believe we didn't talk about Sokoa at all. The suit wearing, I talk like Roman Reigns now, and he's telling Paul Heyman to explain the whole situation to him. And then Tama Tonga gets out of the car, and he says, okay, I need you to explain it again. Like, that's really good. Sokoa... Mm-hmm. I was disappointed that they did what they did with him for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, where he just wasn't really doing anything. But I am totally fine with it if this is where we end up on the other side. Like, you and I have talked about Sokoa before. He's probably my favorite in the, like, early 30s, like, hasn't reached their potential yet group. And we're seeing now that he has a lot more than what they've led on so far. And it's been perfect. And Heyman is the perfect foil to it with how he just cowers to the guy. Like, it's really well done.
What do you think Heyman's role is with Roman gone for an extended period, Jimmy Uso out for whatever reason for enough of an extended period not to be in the draft? Does Heyman just act scared of has a sort of a different dynamic, but he just comes out every week with Solo and Tonga for months?
I think eventually he will succumb to the hostile takeover, maybe in like a Stockholm syndrome kind of way.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of surprised it didn't happen tonight, honestly. And when Owens and Orton got the better of that exchange, I thought we were going to get a debut of another Bloodline member.
Yeah.
So with that on the horizon, I think that's what eventually happens, is Heyman kind of succumbs to it, and then Roman comes back and snaps it out of him, or we find out Heyman is, I was just doing what I had to do, and thank God you're back. You can fix all this. Like, I think the eventual place we get with all of this is Roman is a face and Heyman is a face, and they take down this new version of the Bloodline. To me, the most interesting thing would be, depending on how long Roman is out, if between now and then the title actually ends up on Solo. To me, that's like the most interesting place they could take this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily think that's going to happen.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. I mean, post WrestleMania, getting to see Solo step up in the way that until this moment, until these recent weeks, he was protected in the sense that he wasn't showing, you can tell this was planned for a long time because he wasn't showing subservience or fear towards anything and anybody. He was always just taking it all in. And now that Roman's gone, Rock's gone, Usos are broken up, Jimmy's gone, it's like, okay, now we get to see character-wise, like as a character, who he's becoming, but also kind of stepping back, what's he capable of? Is he capable of coming across as an alpha? Will it work? Or is he just seeming like a poor man's Roman Reigns and he's just going to, you know, shrink in the moment? And Heyman is helping a lot in that regard, you know, because Heyman showing fear and cowering is a big part of what makes Solo seem legitimately intimidating. This is, you know, Paul Heyman's hung around with some pretty tough people. And for him to be as intimidated and skittish even as he is around Solo is giving Solo a boost that he wouldn't have otherwise. But I, you know, the range of what we've seen from Solo so far, I would say it's encouraging, but not definitive. And it'll just take some more time and developments to see, you know, I mean, Bray Wyatt was a super compelling character. And as I talked about in the documentary, when the bell rang, it was hard to have it work in the universe that, you know, everyone else operated within, as Levesque said in the documentary. And with Solo, you know, I mean, obviously he's different wrestler than Bray in different circumstances because he's grounded in this universe, and that was part of what Hunter was saying. But is he able to carry this shift in his character, this progression, into feeling like a wrestler that you could imagine ending a three-hour PLE in a really good match with the stakes and gravitas feeling high enough to compete with what Cody's achieved, what Seth in the past has done, and certainly what Roman has done. And, you know, that's yet to be seen. But it's fresh and it's different. And obviously the more successful Solo is in the meantime, the bigger deal it'll be when Roman shows up again.
Well, to what you just said, I do think it's worth mentioning that Solo is no longer like main event of the week guy anymore.
Right. Yep.
Over the last, you know, month or so.
Absolutely.
And I think that's important because as good as that was for him to get, like, that exposure in the early going, at this point, if he was doing that, it would feel a little less than, and he would have to put on, like, those 10-minute matches. We'll see with the tag match at Backlash, but if they're smart, then Tama Tonga works the majority of that, and Solo is more... what's like the general ordering Tama Tonga around. Because mm-hmm. I think the most interesting thing about all this is Solo has gone from like the unhinged part of the Bloodline to this sociopathic monster. And he went out and found the other part of his family. And the guy that he found is the only one that's like more nuts than him.
Yeah. Yes. And that's the X factor in this too, is how does that develop over time?
Exactly. And yeah. if it turns out that that's like their bond, is they're the most, you know, sadistic guys in the family. Whereas, you know, you had Jay who felt bad about them doing bad stuff, or you have Jimmy who's just a follower and really has no gumption of his own. And like Reigns just wanted to be like the head honcho, but he's not really like this psycho who's trying to hurt people. And for the most part, his character didn't do a lot of that, like even during the beatdowns. But like Sokoa and Tonga are portrayed as actual like they're supervillains. Like, they want to hurt people. So I'm interested to see where that goes long term and how Solo continues to morph into that while Tonga kind of takes on his role. That's what's been interesting. And we'll see what happens when they add the spoiler guy also.
Anything else? I'm kind of scrolling through to see if there's anything we're just... But what do you think about AJ's promo, just declaring LA Knight was the agitator who caused him to act a certain way, and we close with a face-to-face preview of next week's face-to-face with intensity, but no heel turn when, you know, AJ could have attacked Cody and tried to cost him a match against Carmelo or something like that.
For a match where the outcome is not in question and never will be, the contract signing was really well done, and I'm very happy they didn't fall back on, like, every trope they ever do in a contract signing, and they kept it very much, like, respect-based, and we're going to have a match, and it's all about, at this point, you know, winning the title is one thing, but you've got to keep it. And Styles bringing up that basically he has nothing to lose and Cody has everything to lose, because if you win the title and then can't defend it, you're just a footnote. I thought all that was really well done. I really enjoyed that. And I could see, if you're a casual person at home, you think, well, I mean, he does have a point. Like, Cody's never been champion before. Can he defend this? And so it adds a little bit of intrigue to something that is, like, not in doubt at all.
Yeah. Yep. Good point. Any thoughts on Bianca Belair's interview and then the yelling match with her and Jade against the Kabuki Warriors?
The best part was the transition to the next segment where Tama Tonga and Kevin Owens just fought right in between them. like Belair and Cargill came off as stars. They're clearly going to win, and we'll move on from there. I fully assume Damage Control ends up on Raw and they can go do something else. And beyond that, though, there's just nothing to it. The whole thing with Belair and Damage Control is so played out, and they just need to get it over with and move on. And she even said as much in her promo. Like, she basically told everybody that we're finally going to get rid of them because I have Jade with me, and we're going to finally move on from all this.
Yeah, yep. Very good. Alex, anything else?
No, that's it.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks to our listeners. And we'll talk to you all next time, which will be for in terms of our free show here on the post show after Raw, when we have a full, complete draft to analyze on Monday night. So join us then.